If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org. If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Barack Obama had his first meeting with Pope Francis at the Vatican today. Now, Obama is trying to create an alliance with the Pope just as the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, just finished oral arguments as to whether government can actually make individuals and corporate entities violate their religious belief. And this is that case with Hobby Lobby is actually before the Supreme Court right now. And we're going to talk about that in just a few moments, but this is Graceland here on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Jennifer Meadows, here with author Curtis Mang, and tonight our guest is Jake Danishevsky. Now, he is a Russian-born American citizen. We're going to be talking about his personal experiences growing up in the former Soviet Union. Also going to be talking about the situation in Russia with the buildup of this Russian-Ukrainian. I'm going to go ahead and call it a war. That's what it looks like. And also the problem of socialism and communism that is becoming very apparent here in the United States as well. But thank you for joining us here on Conservative Nation Media this evening. Now, I thought this was very interesting timing here, Curtis, just what's going on here with this. You know, what was Obama doing? Was he like, man, I'm just in the neighborhood, just thought I'd drop by the Vatican and say, yo, Pope, what's up? I mean, what was that? What was going on with that?
Hard to say, but, he did get a private tour of the Colosseum, so maybe that's what he really wanted to do. Who knows?
I have no idea. It's interesting. And I think it's not a coincidence that all the stuff is coming up in the Supreme Court right now with this Hobby Lobby case. And a lot of people are speculating on what's going to happen with this. And it appears, and who knows really at this point, appears like this may get knocked down. Is that what you've been reading too?
I kind of get that impression that Kennedy, who is normally a swing vote, and certainly based on the way the questions went during oral arguments earlier this week, that those that read the Supreme Court tea leaves kind of got the impression that that Hobby Lobby could come out victorious in this court case, and that the Supreme Court would rule in favor of their objection.
Yeah, and we certainly hope so. That would be a big win for religious liberty. There's so much going on. It's hard to keep up with everything. But you know, I think what was happening today, it's hard to get in this administration's mind with all the things that are going on, but I think he was probably looking for common ground and looking for support from mm-hmm. the Pope. And certainly not going to get that because there's big differences over, of course, abortion and birth control. But from reading today, it looks like they talked a whole lot about things they could agree on, like income inequality and about immigration reforms. So it certainly won't get any arguments from the Vatican on either of those two issues.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. But, I don't think the Vatican has ever had any real good ideas as to how to promote income equality without going forward and doing what Obama would like to do, which is tax the wealthy and give it away to others.
You're right, and I think too many people don't understand that when we talk about income inequality, we're essentially talking about a very communistic and socialistic ideal. And so that was very controversial, and we talked about that on several shows many months ago when Pope Francis first came in. As the new pope, he talked a whole lot about that, and it sounds all fuzzy, warm and fuzzy, oh, you know, let's be good to the poor people and that kind of thing, but really you're talking about a very communistic idea there about income inequality and about fairness.
Well, one of the best ways to improve the lot of the poor is through capitalism, and that has been proven for the last 250 years, that country economies that lean towards capitalism have a much higher level than those that don't. There's no argument about that. You can talk about income inequality all you like, but the fact is, even in the heyday of the Soviet Union, there was income inequality. It just happened to be 98% were poor and 2% had some money.
You're right, and we've seen nothing but poverty increase under this president, and we've got all these people sitting out here on welfare with food stamps and unemployment. We've got almost one third of the country without jobs, and so we're all going to be equally miserable if Obama gets his way. So I don't know about all this income inequality and socialistic ideals. And speaking of that, there's some news out again about another Obamacare delay. And so why don't you tell us about that? I know this has just happened, I think, just yesterday, didn't it?
Yes, yesterday or Monday. It just stands to reason. I guess when you write laws in pencil, that they seem to don't hold up very well. So the Obama administration announced earlier this week that the final enrollment deadline for Obamacare will be extended beyond its original March 31st deadline, which was the end of the enrollment for 2014. Yes, just one of many. They said it would be loosened for people with special sign-up circumstances. Now, those, quote, special circumstances, unquote, include, according to Harry Reid, anyone who, like Harry Reid, apparently is too dumb to figure out the Internet.
I saw that yesterday. That's insane, and it's insane because I did read this yesterday, too, that this is the 38th change to the law, to Obamacare. And so I'm guessing that's the 38th time that this deadline has been moved. And talking about that, man, and I want to get back to what you're talking about with Harry Reid, because it's just absolutely insane. But, John Boehner was making fun of this delay also. He said, what the hell is this? He said, is it a joke? Another deadline made meaningless. He said, if he hasn't put enough loopholes in the law already, the administration is now resorting to honor system to enforce it. And that was, I guess, the big announcement yesterday, is now they're on the honor system. Is that what you understand?
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole thing, it is a joke. Those that are Obamacare proponents, look at those that want to repeal it and say, just shut up, it's the law. Well, exactly what part of it is the law? Is it the part that says the deadline was April 1st? The part that said employers had to offer health care for their employees if they're 50 plus in 2014, but now it's 2015. Which part of it of the law are they talking about? We don't know, because the law seems to be changing on a daily basis. And I think,
we no longer, Curtis, have to have Congress to change law, because willy-nilly, the president's just basically by decree, saying, okay, today we're going to move it. Oh, let me see. Let's get our calendar out. Okay, we're going to move it beyond this particular date. And it's ridiculous because, you know, and I know we were talking about this earlier today. Now, how many people thus far have actually signed up? You know, we've got, I don't even know, we were talking about this. How many people are in the country? We got 300 and maybe 50 million or some odd. And so how many
plus,
people
yes.
have?
Yes. And
so how many have signed up?
They announced today that they hit the 6 million mark in Obamacare enrollees.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where that number comes from. I don't think they know where that number comes from. It was probably pulled out of thin air, but let's take them at their word and say, okay, they've got 6 million people that have, in some manner or fashion, gone through the website, whether the state or the federal website, and applied for the insurance. Unknown also is how many of those have even paid, and if they intend on paying. We don't know. They don't know. And we also have to keep in mind that, you know, at the end of 2013, there were at least 5 million people who lost their health insurance specifically because of Obamacare. So if you take the administration's 6 million figure and you subtract the 5 million who lost their insurance, that's a net gain of 1 million. That's not real impressive.
No, not especially when you start looking at the numbers, how much money has been spent on the website, on the whole deal. I mean, it's really pretty incredible. And then you start seeing all these people making excuses, and I want to get back to the point you made just a minute ago about Harry Reid and basically his response about, you know, people not being able to use the Internet is he was trying to make an excuse for the fact that more people haven't signed up. And the real deal is nobody wants Obamacare, Senator Harry Reid. That's the reason why nobody has signed up. It's not because people can't use the Internet. That's just ridiculous.
Well, and I think, you know, let's recall that it was just a few weeks ago that Harry Reid called everyone who had voiced a negative experience with Obamacare, he called them all liars. Not some of them, but all of them liars. And,
oh, yeah. Yeah, because there's been no bad experiences so far, for sure.
Oh, well, certainly not. And you know, I think one of the many problems that Harry Reid has, one of the many problems, is that he seems to think that all of America is just like him. That is a lying, ignorant nitwit. And so if he assumes that, then yes, he could say that, oh, well, you know, people aren't signing up, or we need to extend the deadline because they're too dumb to use the Internet.
Exactly. I completely, I mean, they keep making excuses for this law. And the fact of the matter is people don't want Obamacare, and it's been circulating widely in the press. It's just better, you're better off not signing up, paying penalties or whatever comes next. And we've been hearing from a lot of political pundits and whatnot that they think Obamacare is finally on its deathbed. It's going to die. And I happen to agree with that, but where does that leave us? That's the frightening thing. It's going to leave, I think, a lot of Americans with no health care at all, no insurance. And so what's that going to do to the entire industry? We have no idea.
Well, we don't. This is all uncharted waters. And, you know, they turned the healthcare industry upside down with Obamacare. And if and when it gets overturned or, you know, we do something to eliminate it, you know, then what do we have? You know, we've got a colossal mess again, but it gives us the opportunity to you know, put something together that would work rather than this disaster called Obamacare. And I think that's the key. Now, there's something also interesting, I think, is you know, the Hobby Lobby case my dog just...
Evidently, your dogs are big into the... Yeah, they like okay. The Hobby Lobby case.
Oh, they're thrilled with the Hobby Lobby, indeed, yeah. So, no, what I was going to say is that, you know, the Hobby Lobby case is before the Supreme Court right now, but there's another case, I think, in federal court dealing with the state exchanges and the federal exchanges. And the way the law reads, as I understand it, is that only health care that's obtained through the state exchanges is eligible for subsidies. And they did that intentionally through the law so that people would go to the state exchanges and so that, that it would create an incentive for the states to create these exchanges. Well, as we know, only about a third of the states created their own exchanges, and the federal government had to come and develop its own website for the other 30-plus states. So the argument is that anyone who purchases insurance through the federal exchange, according to the law, is not eligible for subsidies. And what they said is, you know, what Kathleen Sebelius and his and her HHS team said, well, we're just going to do it anyway. Well, that's not what the law said. So, you know, that is something also that's working its way through the courts, and it could be very interesting to see how that ends up.
Yeah, and I mean, seriously, I wish this law would just go ahead and die, and we could go back to the way things were. You know, we had a great healthcare system; things were working pretty well. We only had what was it, like 5 million of uninsured here in the United States? Was that no? How many people were actually uninsured? That's a figure we need to know. Maybe
The number from Obama and the Democrats as they were pushing Obamacare through Congress is it changed, but it was anywhere from I think 30 to 50 million. I don't think we know.
Okay, 30 to 50.
But you know what? It's a number, and you know there are certainly things that we could do or could have done, to enhance or tweak the system. It was probably one of the best systems in the world. It wasn't perfect. And I think we can all agree that, you know, those indigent that can't afford health care insurance, we could do something for.
Right.
You know, I'm certainly not opposed decoupling health care insurance from employers. And you know, allowing individuals to get their own insurance, not a problem with me. That is something that that the Democrats opposed until they came up with Obamacare. So,
right.
You know, there are things that we could do or could be done to enhance the system rather than the colossal mess that they create.
Oh, yeah. I mean, instead of this complete overhaul, we now have full-blown socialized medicine. We have people out here all across America who are being turned away for care. And I think those stories need to be highlighted because that's really what's at the bottom of socialized medicine. It's not about more benefits, more care, cheaper medicine. Really what it's about is restricting care and deciding who gets the care and who doesn't. And that's what people need to understand. You know, and we were talking about, you know, websites and talking about all these people who've lost their policies and whatnot. But the seriousness of this is the fact that people who need care won't be able to get it. And that could be life-threatening in a whole lot of instances. And we're starting to see some of that all across the country. So it's definitely no laughing matter for Americans. So we definitely need to get this situation back on track. Well, conservativenationmedia.com starts off the work week every Monday in a big way. It's Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance. But even if you're not from the volunteer state, the issues that affect Tennessee are spreading out all over America. Dave Vance brings his veterans insight and the most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Monday, so make sure to check him out. Brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. Inside Tennessee Mondays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. And Curtis, we need to take a break right here. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to our guest for this evening. That's Jake Danishevsky. You don't want to miss this. He is a Russian-born American citizen and an author. We're going to talk about his book and a few other things as well. But let's take a few minutes right here for a word from our sponsor.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811, pcsforautomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
Foreclosure is hard on every member of the family, but your family is not alone. If you're struggling with your mortgage, there is help. To learn about the government's Making Home Affordable program, visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE to speak to a HUD-approved housing counselor. It's free of charge. Visit makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE today. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, NeighborWorks America, and the Ad Council.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Find a relaxed position to let go of the time you left your daughter's blouse in the dryer too long and it shrunk 4 sizes, or when you donated her private diary to the public library. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
The broken and lost world, you got inside my head. I set my best to be guarded, and I'm an open book instead. I just feel reflection inside of my eyes, that I'm looking for purpose, just looking for light. I'm falling apart, I'm barely breathing, with a broken heart.
If you are just joining us this evening, this is Graceland here on Conservative Nation Media. Feel free to give us a call at 718-305-7176. And we've been talking about a few things, Obamacare, and I'm sure we're going to continue talking about that for weeks and months and maybe even years to come. And I believe our guest for this evening is here with us. Tonight we're going to be talking to Jake Danishevsky. And Jake, you with us?
Yes. Hi. How are you today?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to be on your show. And hi, Curtis. Hi, all the listeners. And it's great to be in America, just not great to have this president and this puppets in our White House.
Amen, honey. Well, our guest this evening is Jake Danishevsky, who is a Russian-born American citizen and author of the book Aftertaste and Tales from Russia, which is his memoir of growing up in the former Soviet Union. And Jake, glad to have you with us this evening.
I am glad to be here. It's really great to hear you, and the way you describe Obamacare, I mean, we can talk about it in a little more detail, but what you guys mentioned, what Curtis mentioned, is equality makes everybody miserable. If equality comes from the government, this is exact words that I use when people ask me about communism, socialism, and definitions. I go, it does not matter to the person who doesn't have anything to eat, anything to wear, how you equate and how you articulate their misery, because this is what it is. Equality from government is just misery.
You're right. And, you know, that could be happening any time now under this president, because seriously, it's incredible when you stop and think about where the welfare numbers are, people on food stamps. We're sitting here with almost one-third of our population is unemployed. It's insane. And I'm sure some of this may actually be a little bit familiar. You know, you growing up in the former Soviet Union, it's probably a little bit of deja vu for you. And I wanted to kind of get into my first question to you, just talking about what's going on right now in the with Russia and the Ukrainian situation. So is this probably kind of weird watching this from the United States, because you are originally from the Ukraine.
Correct. I was born in Kyiv, Ukraine, and we immigrated from Kyiv, Ukraine in 1979. We actually left Kyiv, Ukraine, I believe we left 2 days before, but we left Russia on July 4th of 1979. So some people say it's my Independence Day.
Wow, that's neat.
I know.
That's so cool. I love that.
It is pretty cool. When I put it in a book and I was doing an interview with somebody and they pointed out, that's your Independence Day, I go, you know what? I never actually thought about that. It's pretty amazing. It is pretty amazing. And you know what's amazing is that we left Kyiv, Ukraine. We left Kyiv, Ukraine for many reasons. Ukrainian people in America are great. They're great people, just like every people who want freedom, who want opportunity, who just want to be able to succeed, provide for their children. But in Ukraine, we had a little bit of a problem. I mean, Russia in general was not very equal to Jews. We, as American, as Soviet Jews, we were very, very discriminated against. So when people tell me, oh, you're racist towards Obama, you're prejudiced because he's black, I have no prejudice towards anybody because I know what it's like to live in a real racism, a real prejudice, and I was just Jewish by birth. There is no religion in Russia. There was no religion to be practiced. We didn't know that religion, Judaism is a religion, but I was called a Jew, all the kind of names in the book, by my peers, by my teachers, by officials in school, by anybody who could possibly just want to hurt you. So if they say that communism created equality, it was anything but equality. But to go back to Ukraine, Ukraine actually never wanted to be part of Russia. Ukraine wanted to join Nazi Germany. If they didn't start killing people, Hitler could have had Ukraine in 2 days. Ukrainians welcomed the German troops because they didn't want to be Russian. And listen, I mean, if they wanted to separate, that's fine. Ukraine was one of the biggest players in the breakup of Soviet Union. Ukraine was one of the second largest nuclear power in the world. When Russia broke up, when Soviet Union broke up, they found more nuclear weapons in Ukraine than any other part of Soviet Union. They had the second largest arsenal in the world, in the entire world. So,
that's
of course,
incredible.
Putin, mm-hmm. It is incredible. It's pretty incredible. So, of course, Putin, you know, now that Crimea used to be part of Russia at some point, now it's Ukraine, and Putin doesn't really care about communism because Putin is opportunist. He's a very smart man. He knows what he wants, and he wants to get richer and be more prosperous. And he knows that Soviet Union, communism, would not really give him all those freedoms and opportunities to make personal money as much as the free market. But he does want his entire Soviet Union as a nation back. And Ukraine is one of the biggest players in that whole breakup. So I have a feeling he wants Ukraine back, and he's not going to stop his troops just at Ukraine.
You read my mind, Jake, because that was my next question to you. You're great. But I'm sitting here thinking, you know, so many people, you know, we've been making fun of Vladimir Putin and how, you know, he's this manly man and he's out riding bears, bare-chested and stuff like that. And here we have our president, you know, he looks like a fairy riding a bicycle with the helmet on. And, you know, we're totally not prepared for toward this war? Because here's what I think is coming. It's going to be the United States against Russia in the end. And we're not prepared for that because I'm telling you, the Russians have already seen a lot of hardship and whatnot. And that was my next question to you, so I'm going to shut up here. But, you know, I think the Ukraine is gone. I think he's got that. He's got today. I just read 100,000 troops are gathering on the border of the Ukraine. Okay, they're going to try to defend that. And then I just read just yesterday, and I'm going to let you respond, that Poland has actually called up their reservists as of this week. It's scary. It's frightening stuff. So where do you think this is going with Putin?
Well, I always try to say I don't have a crystal ball, but let me just add, and I'm sorry I broke your thunder for the next big question. I apologize. Putin, let me first describe the man, so this way many people might know, many people might not know. Putin was the head of KGB. Now, if you're familiar with KGB, and if you've been listening to any kind of news for the past 20, 30 years, KGB was and still is one of the most brutal internal organizations of Soviet Union. Now, Russia had KGB and still has KGB. KGB is an organization just like CIA. The only difference is KGB doesn't go under any radar, under any rules, and Putin was the head of that organization. Now, you do not become a head of an organization like that by baking a pie. You do not become a head of organization like that by riding a female bicycle. I mean, you don't organize communities. Putin is smart, conniving, brutal, murderous. I mean, all the names. And I'm not saying it in a nice way. I'm not saying it in any way to show that I like Putin, but I respect the man, and so as many other people. See, when you fear somebody, you actually tend to respect them more than if you love them. And Reagan was feared. Even though Reagan was a great guy, Russians feared Reagan. And I even heard a college professor, a liberal college professor, who voted for Obama twice. It goes beyond me why. But he said on the radio that we do not have somebody in the White House to stand up to somebody like Putin. We need someone like Reagan. This is a liberal professor saying, not me, not a conservative, not a Republican, a liberal Russian studies college professor saying that. So we know we don't have somebody, and we don't have somebody who Putin respects. I mean, never mind whether they like each other. Obama might be a gymnast. He's flexible. He's going to be more flexible after the next election. I mean, he says these things, and he thinks that Putin is going to play ball because he's diplomatic. Obama is a naive little boy, and Putin is a man. And men do not respect little boys.
Now, I totally agree with you. I think we're so not prepared. I even think a lot of the people are actually kind of letting Obama off the hook. I think his MO was always to come in and destroy the United States. Maybe that sounds controversial, but case in point, I just read a couple of days ago, I think it was actually just yesterday, that he's talking about dismantling all of our missile programs. Now, explain to me, why would you want to be doing that right now? I mean, that does not make any sense. And hold just a minute, Jake. I'm going to reintroduce you, and then I'm going to bring my co-host, Curtis Meng, into this discussion, and then we're going to have to go to break. Well, our guest this evening is Jake Danishevsky, who is a Russian-born American citizen and also the author of the book Aftertaste and Tales from Russia, which is a memoir of him growing up in the former Soviet Union. And, Curtis, I'm going to bring you into the discussion as well. I really do, Jake. I think that his MO, his deal was he was here to weaken America. And, I mean, why in the world would you dismantle our missile programs right now? It doesn't make a bit of sense.
Well, I think our allies and our enemies now look at the United States as a big country wearing mom jeans.
I agree with you.
I might disagree a little bit with you, Jennifer. I don't know if he's intentionally he came in intentionally trying to dismantle the United States to the point that it's a weakened state. But I think his worldview is so different and at odds with the traditional American worldview that it really defies logic and anything that we have seen before.
Well, let me can I just add something to
sure.
both of you?
Sure.
Let me agree with Chen on this, because Curtis, you're right. I mean, maybe he's just incompetent, maybe he's a liar. Which either way, it's a dangerous situation that we have a president that literally either doesn't know what he's doing, or whether he knows what he's doing and doing it intentionally. Either way, it's very dangerous for our nation and the world, because we're a superpower. We're a leader in the world, and now we have someone who cannot make decisions or makes them on purpose to ruin things. But I'll tell you something. I agree with Jen, what she said, because Obama is a very key set in his campaigns and afterwards. He said, I fundamentally want to change America. That was one of his statements, and nobody listened to him. He fundamentally wants to change, destroy America. Then he said something else, which also goes with what Jen said. He said in, I believe, 2009, he said that let somebody else lead, like China. Why should we be a leader in the world? Let New World Order happen. And those were not misspoken sentences. He actually doesn't want America to succeed or lead the world. He wants some country like China or maybe even Russia to lead the world.
Yeah, well, I mean, and we're on the same wavelength. I completely agree with you. I don't know that I really would have felt this way a couple years, maybe even 2 years ago. I was really hoping for the best, but you continue to see him in every single instance weakening, bowing. You know, we've become such a joke. I know just yesterday, I think before he went to the Vatican, I believe he was in the Netherlands. I may have that wrong, but he had a speech. It was very interesting. I don't know, did you guys see this? There was a little video of him. He was in Europe. I think it was the Netherlands, and he was basically talking about human rights and all this stuff, which is completely ludicrous. Nobody was even listening to him. There were all these press people there from Europe. There was one guy that clapped for him like four times, and then that was it. And then he walked off. Did y'all see that?
I know, that's great.
You need to look for that, because I think that's very telling, because I think he has lost the world stage. It's Americans that need to wake their you-know-what's up. America, I'm telling you, we're in deep trouble, and we're going to come back in just a few minutes. We're going to keep talking to Jake Denishevsky, and he was born in the former Soviet Union. He knows what he's talking about, so we're going to continue talking about Barack Obama and some of the things that are going on here in the United States, and compare that with his experience growing up in the former Soviet Union. Now, this is Grace Lound here with Jennifer Meadows and Curtis Mang. We will be back in just a few minutes.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
You know, it's okay to rock and roll and party. Just let someone else do the driving. Hi, this is Ray Manzarek of The Doors for RAD. Please don't drink and drive, and don't drive with someone else who's been drinking.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Bring on news, bring on news.
Adopting a new pet is a rewarding experience. And Shelter Pets makes super pets. Your new best friend will steal your heart, bring you happiness, and enrich your life for years to come. You can make a difference in the life of an animal. Adopt and bring home a Shelter Pet today. To find out more, visit theshelterpetproject.org. This message has been brought to you by the Humane Society of the United States, Maddie's Fund, and the Ad Council.
Jennifer Meadows here with author Curtis Mang. Tonight we're talking to another author, Jake Danishevsky. He's a Russian-born American citizen, and we're talking about his experience growing up in the former Soviet Union and doing some comparisons with some things he saw there and what's happening in the United States as well. And Curtis, I'm going to let you take over from here, and I know you've got a couple of questions as well.
Well, thanks, Jennifer. I do. And, Jake, it's really good to talk with you. And I've got a couple of comments first and then some questions. But, you know, I agree with what you said earlier regarding Putin. I don't see him as ideological either. I don't think he laments the demise of the Soviet Union because it ended communism in Russia, but rather the effect that it had on Russia's standing in the world. And, you know, he wants to, what I call, get the band back together, gobble up all of the republics that were formerly part of the Soviet Union to strengthen Russia's position in the world. Now, he said something interesting and perhaps ominous in his Kremlin address a week or so ago. He said, "We do not want to divide Ukraine. We do not need that." Now, you can take that two ways, I guess. One is that he doesn't have any further interest in Ukraine as far as pulling that in, as he did to Crimea, into Russia's sphere. Or you can look at it the other way, in that he doesn't want to go in and just take eastern Ukraine. He wants to go in and take all of it, which I suspect is more likely. And but I'm curious to get your perspective on, are there parts of Ukraine, the eastern part, for example, that leans towards Russia rather than maybe Western Europe? Or how does that play out?
Well, great question. And this is what I think. And, I mean, Jen mentioned Poland, and I never answered that question. So that's great that you asked that, because now we can combine the two. You see, Putin is not an idiot. He's not he's murderous. He's conniving, but he's not an idiot. He's not going to start a war with Poland or other nations. But he, as you mentioned, he said we do not want to divide Ukraine. Of course, what's the point of dividing the same people? Because whether you're Russian or Ukrainian in Ukraine right now, when they separated, you got Russians living in Ukraine. You got Ukrainians living in Russia. You got entertainers from both countries entertaining in both in the same language. So I think what Putin is trying to say, he does want to unite the Soviet Union. I mean, he's not going to go after other countries that are part of NATO. He's not going to go after countries that are European Union. He's not crazy. I mean, he doesn't want the entire world, including America, to jump into some World War III. But not that Obama has anything in his hands to do that. But at the same time, Putin, he doesn't want to upset the entire world. When he tries to unite all the republics, he's really saying, I'm just pulling Russia back together, and most of the world might be like, well, we're going to draw a red line. And we know what red lines mean when Obama says that. So,
yeah.
You know, so Putin's going to take Ukraine, he's going to take Latvia, he's going to take Estonia, he's going to take all the other republics, and he's going to say, I'm just putting my country back together. And Obama's going to say, well, if you do this, we're going to draw you a pink line. And that's about what, and Putin knows that. Putin knows that. If Putin goes outside of borders of previous Soviet Union, now he's going to have another problem, he says. He's going to have blue helmets that really do nothing, but at least he's going to have more people involved in this. But if he just does it within those borders, not touching Poland, touching any other nation outside, not touching Hungary, he should be okay, and he knows it. He knows it. He doesn't have anybody to say big words and actually mean big actions. He just knows that Obama speaks big but has very little suit wearing kind of a guy.
Well, and it's, too, it's interesting, too, Jake, because I'm telling you, Poland, I'd be nervous if I was over in that part of the world. I mean, because Poland, and I just saw this, I mentioned this a little while ago, they just called up all their reservists just this week. And so they're obviously anticipating something. And
sure.
I think the Ukraine, I think you're exactly right, and we all can agree on this, that Putin is trying to put together, back together, what was the former Soviet Union. And so I know we're going to watch this situation. And I know it must be really, really strange for you. You know, here you are in the United States, and you're watching your birth country, you know, in this kind of distress. It must be very, very strange for you. And we don't have a whole lot of time. And I wanted to take this back to what's happening in the United States right now. You know, your family, I'm guessing, came to America for freedom. And now you're seeing what's happening here in America. We've got full-blown socialism, and I think we're kind of moving out of socialism into, you know, what's next. You know, it's the C word. It's communism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it must be interesting and frightening and maybe even disheartening to see what's happening in America with all of this. So what do you think about what's happening in America with our government and just all the interventionism and we're really kind of in a strange place right now in the United States?
We're at the crossroads, and we have people who still want to save this nation. We have people who are disillusioned, and then we have somebody in the middle, the people that say, well, I really don't like what's going on, but you can't say that Obama's doing it on purpose. You can't say that we have socialism because socialism is not all that bad. So now you have called demoralization. Basically, you have a public that sees something, feels something, and they say, no, there is no way it's going to happen in America. And that's more disturbing to me than Barack Obama. See, Barack Obama is a tool. He's a tool. He's a product of communistic upbringing. He's a product of his mother, his grandfather, Frank Marshall Davis, Bill Ayers. He's a product of all those anti-American socialists and communists. But now you have major part of America, not a lot of them, but maybe like one-third of America, who say, before they said, oh, Barack Obama is not a socialist. And now you hear these people say, well, socialism is not so bad. And then they say, well, socialism is not communism, but in the meantime, they're all throwing definitions, but the direction of this country is going towards that route, and this is exactly where Barack Obama wants to take us. He's not the one who started taking us there, but he's the one who's really making a lot of strides in getting government involved in everything. Look at perfect example. Recently, he said we're going to give more money towards green energy company that somehow involves Nancy Pelosi's family. Vince Solyndra teaches a lesson already, but people are saying, well, Obama is just trying to change things to make things better, clean energy. We already saw how clean energy works. We dump money we don't have, and we destroy our economy, and then Barack Obama says that we're helping the poor. I mean, where does this all make sense to anybody, including the liberals?
I mean, I I agree with you. I think too many people don't understand socialism and communism. And that was one of my questions, too. There's a difference between socialism, and I'm going to define socialism and communism, and then I can let you guys jump in here with your definition. I think we definitely are in socialism, and I think we're moving in out of that into something that's more authoritarian. And as an example, I'm going to use what's happening with the NSA and all this spying on everybody. Why do we need all this? You know, so my definition of socialism, you know, it's government intervention and government intervention into business and all these different sectors of the United States. And my definition of communism is you've moved beyond that into basically state control. You're completely locked down at that point. You're going to do what we say, Kim Jong-un. Hey, you like my haircut? Well, guess what? I just created a law. Everybody in the country is going to have my hairstyle. Right, Curtis?
Yes, indeed.
I know you heard that. Jake, did you hear that? That was insane.
Yes, I heard it. So
what do you guys, what's the difference between socialism and communism?
Well, I'll tell you the actual, because I started to write a second book if I ever finish it, but I started to actually work on it because people started asking me, give me definitions, especially liberals, they want definitions. Well, Lenin said something very interesting. He said that the most direct path to communism is socialism. And the way I look at two, I mean, without using definitions, is it doesn't matter how you articulate it. It leads to the miserable society. We saw Russia, we saw China, we saw Cuba, we saw many other countries go on the route and they never come back. And when they do come back, you see Putin doing what he's doing right now because there is no stability. And that socialism and communism, either it stays, you create unstable environment and only a few run the entire country. That's it.
I think it is. It's like the whole country is there for the profit of a few. The elites are at the top, and then you've got all the common folk down here at the bottom, and they're the peasant class. You know, we saw this during the Middle Ages, that whole feudal system where you had the royalty at the top, and then everybody else was kind of the common folk. So we're starting to see that in our political elite here in the United States.
Well, yeah, and actually, I make this point in my book about socialism, that the only thing that socialism excels at is mediocrity. In fact, you know, socialism breeds mediocrity, and it is, in fact, a requirement of socialism. So, you know, that's I think, something to keep in mind. I for me, the difference between socialism and communism is that communism actually had an instructional manual, you know, the Marxist Communist Manifesto. I think both breed mediocrity. Both require authoritarianism out from the top down.
I mean,
that's a good definition. I like that.
You're right. I mean, it all sounds good in the definition, and that's why liberals like to speak about definitions. It all sounds good in theory because actually socialism and everybody being equal, it sounds so great that it's easy to sell. I mean, you take 10 people and you say, listen, you all work, and we're all going to get the exact same thing. And they all scream, hurrah, hooray, hooray. And then they all start to work. And then one realizes, I can start drinking, but I still get the same thing. And another one says, I can sleep all day, and I get the same thing. And that's what Russia offered to people. If you were working, like my dad, sometimes they ask you to work second shift or Saturday because somebody next to him was a bad citizen, they needed to raise him. And in Russia, it was a forced employment. So everybody had to work, but not everybody was working.
Yeah, I think, you know, this whole idea of, like you said, this being equal and what we were talking about in our first segment this evening about this income inequality, it sounds good. You know, it's fair and all that kind of thing, but really, how do you enforce that? You know, it's very difficult to enforce. And then, you know, the truth of the matter is we've seen over and over and over again that socialism, communism, these don't work. What works is the free market. You let people have freedom to make their decisions, to make their choices, freedom of, like we were talking about, you know, the Hobby Lobby cases before the Supreme Court. You give people the freedom to choose, you know, whether it's their religion or whatnot, and it works itself out. The free market will work itself out. So I'm going to give you the last question here, Jake. So what would you say to America? How do we get things back on track?
How do we get things back on track is that we have to wake up. We have to realize that nothing in the world is free. I mean, the best line I heard about all of this from Animal Farm is all the animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. I mean, this is not something we can force or create. We have a land of opportunity. We have a country that in the shortest period of time became the richest country in the world. There is a reason why. It wasn't given to us by Barack Obama or his government. It wasn't given to us because we were all equal. But we all equally wanted success. We wanted freedom. We wanted constitutional rights for our children. We wanted future for our children. And that's the only way we're going to get back on track. We have to get back to the Constitution. We have to get rid of people that want to destroy this country by giving things. I mean, if you ask for something and government takes it from somebody else, you only get a minimal percentage of that, what they take. And next person going to take it from is you. So if they're going to create equality, they're only going to create, like Curtis said, mediocrity. Nobody has a chance to succeed. And that's not the country we have, and that's not the country we want.
No, and I think we are at that critical time, and I think so many people in this country right now feel that. 2014 is key. This is a key time. This is our time. And so people like you, Jake, I so appreciate, because you've seen it. You've experienced it. You've lived it. So, you know, I so appreciate you coming on this evening. And Jake, tell people where they can follow you, and not just that, but also where they can buy your book. It's out on Amazon.com, so I guess I kind of let that out of the bag. But if there's somewhere else as well.
Well, if you type, if you Google After Taste Entails Russia, you can find it on BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, 20 other places on the Internet. You can also go to your local store and say, I want Aftertaste and Tales from Russia, and they'll order it for you. I went to Barnes & Noble just to see if they carry my book, and as soon as I said that, the person at the counter said, would you like me to order it? So if you don't feel comfortable getting it online, get it through your local store. They also have in Nook and Kindle format. So, I mean, the book is available in many different ways, and if you have a copy and you read it and you loved it, I mean, I don't care if I sell more copies. Give it to a friend. Give it to a relative. Give it to your mom or dad. I want people to see what we're heading and what direction we're going in.
Well, and not just that, but you've got a sequel, so you're working on another book.
I hope so, if I find time.
Oh, come on, Jake. You know you can do it. You know you can do it. Well, Jake, love having you on the show. I loved having you on the show, Jake, and we're just about out of time, so we'll definitely have you come back on again, and we appreciate it, and take care.
Thank you so much. Thank you both, and thank you to your listeners.
All right. God
bless
you.
God bless.
All right, Curtis, we have just really just about 2 minutes, so why don't you tell our listeners where they can go to follow you and your books as well.
Okay, thanks, Jennifer. They can go to my website, which is mangrites.com. That's MANGWRITES. And I've got both my books are available there. My first book, The Constitution, I'm Not Kidding, and Other Tales of Liberal Folly. And my latest book, which is The Smell of Politics, The Good, the Bad, and the Odorous. Both are humorous looks at politics from a conservative perspective. Also, they're available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and I know Jake is a good capitalist, so go buy his book and have him tell your friends to buy it, too. Don't just give it to them. Have them go buy it and do the same with mine.
There you go. Well, and I just want to thank our listeners for listening to Graceland here on the Conservative Nation Media. And we will be back next week. It'll be Tuesday, the Grit and Grace radio show here on Conservative Nation. And we appreciate, again, all our listeners listening. And until next time, folks, good night.